Big Brothers Big Sisters needs your help. There's a waiting list of more than 50 children hoping for a mentor. It's just a few hours a month. Be a mentor. Become a big. Visit Big Brothers Big Sisters Northeast Florida and click on Be a Big.
Into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Ah, it's good to have you with us. Wednesday, what a beautiful one it was. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Give it to me. Keep it coming. Kidding me? Beautiful day in Jacksonville. I believe Trevor Lawrence is engaged, and I saw it on Twitter right as I was getting ready to go on the program. Let's see here now. It comes to us from, the legend of, I cut it off. Let me find it here for you, because it's important. The legend of Kevin from Duval. Okay. All of you out there on Twitter. He posted it. The fiance standing on the beach. And let me find it here for you. She comes out and she says to Trevor Lawrence, her name is Marissa Mowry. She said, I could get used to living on the beach. Trevor Lawrence, 16. What you think? Huh? How about that? Nice picture of this very nice young lady standing on a beach. I don't know if the beach was here. I have no idea where the beach actually was. But she calls out the future franchise quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I believe is her fiance, and says, what do you think about living on the beach?
So she's saying, Jacksonville, we're coming home, just in a more formal manner. This isn't like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I think that she's now more open to the fact that she's going to be living right on the beach, beach bars, South Side. We out here, Rick. Exciting time.
I think they could probably afford an apartment out there somewhere in Mayport.
They could.
Maybe Neptune. I don't know. Jack's Beach, Atlantic Beach,
Pontevedra. They could come to Chubby's on Thursday.
Where I was at Michler's today, I worked up a lather. Oh, my gosh. Give me these 75-degree days. Just unbelievable. I just took off and I walked and I walked and I walked and I walked. And, there's nothing better. Actually, there is better. I could have been drinking cocktails, but I'm a pro. I had to get ready for tonight's program. So I couldn't do that for my benefit. But, man, I tell you what, I'm just a happy guy when the weather does its part, and it certainly has this week. And my understanding is that it is supposed to continue to be that way the rest of the week. Well, what a great, shot that was today, social media related. I still know that there's a percentage of people out there who, because you've been a longtime Jaguar fan and you kind of play the role of glass half empty, and I get all that, that until you actually see the day that Trevor Lawrence signs his contract to come here and play, that you won't be completely all in. I don't think it's a lot of people. I think it's a smaller percentage, but some of them are out there. I think this post today on social media, on Twitter, by his fiance there is incredibly encouraging. And I, for one, have never, ever doubted that he will not be the number one pick and that he is absolutely on his way to play here for the Jaguars. All right, much more on the Jags coming up. As a matter of fact, let's talk some money with Michael Giannotti. He's going to join us, the co-founder and editor of SpotTrack. Love his website, tracking money, contractually speaking, in the NFL. I actually want to get the latest numbers. I'm under the impression that the release of Tyler Eifert Monday night has freed up $5.25 million under the cap, and I think it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $182, $183 million. Down from 198.2 during the 2020 season. So you're going to shave roughly $15 to $16 million off of that figure. But the Jags in great shape. I have north of $80 million. We'll get those figures coming up here from Michael Giannotti. I also want to speak to him in depth about Cam Robinson. You know, he came out with projections quite a while ago. And he's got Cam with a sizable pay raise. Too much for me. A little bit too much for me. But we will discuss. And, you know, we'll consider the possibility of a trade for Orlando Brown, the opportunity to perhaps bring in another left tackle, and everything else that you could think of. So that's coming up here momentarily. As far as I am concerned, it is the biggest decision this organization has to make. Now, I say that under the context that Trevor Lawrence is a done deal. After that, it becomes left tackle. Nothing else is even remotely close in my world. Okay, as always, you get an opportunity to respond 641-1010 on the text line. You can get me on Twitter as well, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL. Tiger Woods, not drunk, purely accidental. From the police chief in Los Angeles today. And, you know, I think most of the real good people in the world, all they care about is that he's going to be okay and that he can rebound and get with his family. You know, I think we've seen a lot of folks today all of a sudden play the role of a doctor. And all of a sudden, it's become, well, he'll be back in a year. He'll be back in 2 years. He'll never play again. I haven't even gotten there. Okay? I'm just hoping that he can enjoy his kids, enjoy his family as they grow up. And I swore to myself the whole way in tonight, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to overdo it. I'm just going to move along. But it is disappointing for some that Tiger Woods did not fit their agenda. They needed him drunk. They needed him under the influence of painkillers or something else. It's disgusting. It's deplorable. We saw it yesterday. We saw it Sunday night. Or actually, Monday. We saw it yesterday. And, you know, we've seen it again today. It's just such a sad set of circumstances. And I'm just going to leave it with that. I'm not going to beat the dead horse. I am in way too good of a mood to go down that road. But, you know, for those who just wish bad on others, it's because your life sucks. It does. It's because you are so freaking unsatisfied with your own personal life that you want to try to bring down others, particularly those who are far more successful than you. So don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. You still have an opportunity to change. He wasn't drunk, people. And if he didn't fit your agenda, tough. Enough of that. Wish him a speedy recovery. Jay Monahan, listen to him exclusively today on the Golf Channel. Had a lot of nice things to say about Tiger Woods. All right, I'm going to leave that alone. I promise. I'm not going to say anything else about it because this really means a lot to me. And I just can't understand how people just want bad things with other people. I've just never been able to understand that. Anyway, let's get to more important things, right? Money. Jaguars. Who are they paying? Who are they not? Who are they going after? Who are they not? The Cam Robinson deal for me is absolutely enormous. Hayes Carline and I just wrapped up our second edition of our podcast. It is titled Death, Taxes, and Duval. And that'll be up in the very near future. Hayes and I on exact opposite ends of this. Hayes is a huge proponent of a 3-year contract extension, getting it done now, somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 million or so a year over the next three. I think that's, you know, that's doable money for me. That's a very good contract. I don't believe that is going to happen. I have to really look at the fact that Cam Robinson and his camp, they're going to be asking for much more money than that, in my opinion. You know, I think, as I said last night, it's in the $15, $16 million per year. And it's probably a 4-year contract, not a 3-year contract. We can go back and forth on this. And again, Hayes and I do on the podcast, and I have with you out there, Jaguar fans, and we will continue to do this. I mean, it's only the 23rd day of February. This becomes, or once again remains, I should say, really the biggest story in this city. What are the Jags going to do at left tackle? Now, perfect world is he gets better. And if he was to sign a deal like that, 3 years, $11 million per, if he plays solid left tackle, man, that's a bargain. That's a steal. But, you know, where's your confidence level right now for him? Is he all of a sudden just going to get better because you pay him? Or are there a set of circumstances that really need to be considered? Number one, he was hurt a couple of years ago. Number two, he's never had a quarterback here. Number three, the offensive coordinator changes yearly. The scheme changes yearly. They're not a balanced attack. They always pass the football in the second half because they're always trailing. So they're always a one-dimensional team, and that can really hamper an offensive line, especially if you don't have a good quarterback. I mean, all these factors favor Cam Robinson. Does Cam Robinson want to be here? That's a side of it that we don't even know at this particular point. You know, we're under the assumption, now obviously they could franchise tag him and keep him here or you know, put a transition tag on him, and he still has the luxury to sign with another team. But, you know, giving him a long-term contract extension, what if he doesn't want to play here? You know, 4 years here, he said, forget about it. You know, this isn't where I want to be. I want to go elsewhere. That could still be a possibility. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case. I don't know the answer to that question, but it's one that certainly needs to be asked as well. Before I bring in Michael Jannetty, he did say, I have it right here for us, recently, let me find it here. He had his projection. He had him with Taylor Lewin, Taylor Decker, Deion Dawkins, and Donovan Smith. That is where he had him as far as his comparable players. He has a 5-year, $76 million, $139,000 deal down for Cam Robinson. That averages $15,227,000 a year. Wow. Big money. Now, you know what? If Cam Robinson turns into one of the best left tackles in the NFL, then that's a good rate. But if he stays at the same level or drops off, it's a bad deal. Right now, I'm not all in. I'm not. Right now, my thought process is to go in a different direction. Yours? Well, let me know. Text line 641-1010, Twitter, Blue1010XL. Let's kick it off right now with Michael Jannetty. He is with SpotTrac. He will give us the very latest on the Jaguars. Let's look at the books. It's coming up with Rick Ballew.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, one of my favorite websites is absolutely SpotTrac, and Michael Jannetty is always a lot of fun to discuss things with when it comes to really checking the books with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tyler Eifert let go about 24 hours ago, so that freed up about $5.25 million. He does an outstanding job with the website. He's co-founder and editor with SpotTrac, and he goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Michael, thanks for a couple of minutes.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back. All right, final numbers, not final numbers, but updated numbers after Eifert. I'm looking at your website right now, $83,776,000, but we don't know for sure what the actual salary cap figure is going to be.
Yeah, that's the big hanging fruit out there right now. We're going to continue to estimate it at 185. Wishful thinking, probably, but you know the numbers seem to be in the 181 to 183 mark. So, got to give yourself some wiggle room there. But either way, no matter how you slice it, right now Jacksonville's been a really good spot in all assets in the draft, in the free agent market, and of course with the new quarterback situation.
Right. It made sense with Eifert at the age of 30. You know, to pay him more than $6 million against the cap freed up a ton of money. So that was the right move. Do you see anyone else on the roster? I mean, I've got. It seems like nightly I get a Taven Bryan question. He doesn't cost all that much. Fourth year of a rookie first-round deal. Do you see anyone else currently on the roster that you wouldn't be surprised if Urban Meyer and Trump Baalke say goodbye to?
So I do a roster bubble piece every single year, early January, and there's probably 100 names on there. Tyler Eifert was the only Jacksonville Jaguar has on that roster because they have the benefit of waiting right now. New regime, mm-hmm. new coaching staff, new quarterback. Maybe we'll get some practices this offseason, actually. So maybe some time to evaluate the process a little bit. I don't see him making rash decisions. Gardner Minshew comes out in terms of trade talks every now and then. That's a possibility, but just outright cuts for cap reasons or lack of football reasons seems too early to pull the trigger on a lot of those decisions right now.
Yep, absolutely. They're a very young team, as you pointed out, and there's really no need at this particular time. I also enjoy what you have done here with calculated market value of players who are free agents and put them together with comparable players. Outside of Trevor Lawrence coming here with the first overall pick, the biggest decision the Jaguars are going to have to make is what to do at left tackle. So, enter Cam Robinson. I see your base calculated value, 5 years, $76.139 million, $76,139,000. That's an average of $15,227,000. Thoughts on that when it comes to the Jags and Cam Robinson?
I know there's a lot more question out there. I know it's not a slam dunk that he's franchise tagged or that he even is offered a contract right now. I think he's one of those players that, they may let test, see what his value becomes. And if he doesn't find a better situation with basically a guaranteed starting spot, he's going to be back. They have that leverage right now. They have a quarterback coming in that they absolutely have to protect. The Joe Burrow situation is now right in front of their face where he couldn't make 10 weeks because of a lack of offensive line talent / depth. I don't think you screw around with this personally. I really don't. You have the luxury of the number one pick. You have the luxury of cap space, and there are some above average offensive linemen on that open market. And I think Cam Robinson is still considered above average. I at least tag him and hold his place. And I go and sign two or three more. And I really do, if it's a Buffalo Bills model, if it's a Miami Dolphins model where it's literally, let's not get one, let's get four. Let's mm-hmm. get swing tackles. Let's get a center guard / player who can fill in as necessary. Between the Joe Burrow situation and the Chiefs offensive line situation in the postseason, it's more evident than ever that we need 7-8 guys that can handle that line, especially if we have the quarterback figured out.
I like that you said to go out and get some more, because if you do put a tag on him, everyone knows that he won't show up until probably the first week of the season. Therefore, he misses the offseason with Trevor Lawrence. He misses the month of August to work with him. And when you're protecting your most important asset, I don't believe that that is a move the Jaguars can make.
Because he'll hold out? Yeah. See, I look at it differently. I think you don't want to guarantee him too much money right now because you have so much question with him, in my opinion. So you use the tool that's there. It's in the CBA for a reason. This is really one of the reasons you use it. You're not sure just how much investment you want to make on a player. So you tag him, you make him figure it out. If you want to offer him, a lowball contract that's at tag price, so maybe 14 a year for 2-3 years guaranteed, fine. But, I'm going to backload that with major free agent and draft capital to the offensive line because I'm not going to screw around with it.
Michael Jannetty, our guest, co-founder and editor of Spot Track, going into the night here with Rick Ballew on the home of the Jaguars. All right, Jacksonville's in a situation this year where maybe they give up picks and acquire a player. The Orlando Brown situation has been mentioned quite a bit. We know he can play both tackles. He played left here. What's the asking price there? Is it the 25th overall pick? And, what do you believe it's going to cost Michael to sign Brown to a long-term deal? He's in the final year of his contract.
Very interesting because, the problem is that he wants to play left tackle. So is that the move you make to give yourself leverage with Cam Robinson? Probably, because you can overpay Orlando Brown, put him on the roster, and then say, go find your money elsewhere. Look, if he's a left tackle, you're starting 15. That's just where we are right now with left tackles. That's really tier two. Laramie Tunsil has reset this market, and David Bakhtiari's now upped it to $23 million a year. So a minimum of 15 is a discount right now for a good left tackle in this league. Honestly, that's going to be the low bar for a right tackle as well. So any way you slice it, it's going to be probably a late first, maybe an additional pick to get him in the door, because there may be a couple of teams in on him when it comes down to it, March 17th. And then, you know, then we're talking about minimum 15 a year over, you know, 3 years fully guaranteed. So it's look, the entire offensive line is getting extremely expensive. We're going to have guards making upwards of $18 million a year soon.
Right.
We're going to have centers over $12 million, and we've got tackles on both sides of the line now over 18, over 20. So it's not cheap, but again, you just can't screw around with it.
No, you can't. And, you know, you look at a guy like Trent Williams, you know that he can play well. However, he'll be 33. As a matter of fact, I guess the three highest-ranked left tackles who are free agents are all going to be 33. So, you know, where do you rank the risk there with age compared to a much younger Orlando Brown or Cam Robinson?
It's similar because of his age, because he should have more time to develop a little bit and become the savvy vet that the names you mentioned have become.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is this. The problem is Trent Williams is going to get $20 million. And the problem is Villanueva, you know, I have him going to Indianapolis on at least $18 million a year. So to me, the age isn't really a factor in cashing in at in the free agent bank. It's going to happen one way or another. So if those guys are getting $20 million, you know, the 26, 27-year-olds are going to have to start following suit as long as they can hold their own. So all the prices are coming up with all of these linemen, whether you're tier one or tier two, whether you're 32 or 26. It's just going to become a very, very expensive situation for these front offices, and there's really no way out.
You know, we're trying to get an understanding of what Urban Meyer is going to be like. We do have that with Trent Baalke during his years spent in San Francisco. What's your opinion? I know it's somewhat of an unfair question because we don't know yet with Urban, but they have a ton of money to spend. Do you think they're going to be deeply involved with two or three tier one free agents, or do you think they spend most of their money, you know, going a notch below that?
It's a great question. I've had to answer this question a bunch this offseason, and obviously I don't know the right approach because everything's so brand new, and that's dangerous. That's dangerous waters to get into and then throw $50 million into free agency as well. You know, you have it. You don't want to lose it. But to me, what you're about to lose is the draft capital. That you have to absolutely hit on.
Mm-hmm.
Can you wait on, you know, $40 million of this free agent money till next year and roll it over? Absolutely, you can. So, am I targeting one major free agent, whether that's a weapon for Trevor Lawrence or a cornerback to lock down somebody else's passing game? I'm fine with that. Go do that. Am I going to make a Stephon Diggs type acquisition yet for a savvy veteran who can drop it and make our team better? Probably not. That's probably what I'm waiting on. So, you know, maybe I'm spending half of what I have in terms of the free agent market, depending on what's available. But I'm much more concerned with making this the best draft ever. And if that means, you know, acquiring more draft picks, moving up and giving up a couple of those late picks, it's all about hitting on the kids right now, both from a financial standpoint and I think from a quick development standpoint.
All right, well, let's wrap it up with this, and it's somewhat of a follow-up. If, you know, once we get through the first couple of days of free agency, let's say we get into the final week of March, and, you know, the high-priced guys have decided, every day that goes by, do you believe there's more of an opportunity this year for veterans to say, all right, I'll play for a one-year show-me deal and see what I can do in 2021. And, you know, we just saw the negotiations that are going on between Monday Night Football and Disney and the amount of money the owner's going to make, and reportedly 75% of the seats are going to be filled this year. So the cap goes up in 2022. Do you think a lot of veterans are going to exercise that route, or do you think this will be more of what it normally is in free agency?
I think we're headed for an NBA offseason here, Rick. I think this is going to be not only one-year deals and one-year prove-it deals, if you want to call it that, but I think it's going to be, you know, if I got two or three guys that I like playing with and we're all kind of free agents together, let's go find a team with a bunch of cap space and kind of group up for a year and have some fun with it, try to win together. And if that works, look out. Because
wow.
It only took one situation in the NBA for that to become the new trend, right?
Yeah,
and now it's turned into forcible trades in the NBA because of it to get your buddies together. So I think it's dangerous waters that the NFL is setting themselves into with this major cap dump. I kind of hope that they find a way to bring this thing closer to 195 if possible. But that's, to me, you know, you've got a lot of important free agents who could turn down 5-year deals for a very lucrative 1-year deal. if it means I get to bring two or three guys with me and we can kind of control our destiny from here out. So look out for that.
I've never heard of that before. I mean, that's real interesting. I guess you can make a point that indirectly Tampa did that, particularly with Fournette and Antonio Brown.
The second sign Tom signed, it was let's go Gronk, let's go AB, right? And then when Fournette became available, Tom decided it was time for him. Look, these guys have power, especially the quarterbacks. They have more power than maybe any position in sports, and they're starting to exercise it. And that's going to it's going to bring changes with it for the whole league.
Michael, always a lot of fun. I thoroughly did enjoy it, and I know our listeners did. Look forward to talking with you again down the road.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
There he goes. Michael Jannetty does a real nice job. And, you know, this website has grown throughout the years with their, the special additions they do to the website outside of just the money side of things. And I just love the website. You know, the money's ridiculous to me. It's funny money. It's monopoly money. It's money that I'll never see. It's money that most of our listeners will never see. But it's also a very short period of time in which you can earn this money. My gosh, Cam Robinson, 5 years, $76.1 million. $76,139,000. That's an average of $15,227,000. I just can't pay him that. I can't do it. And I know it's not my money. It would be so easy for me to sit here and say, I can see it. There's a vision right now in my head. Lawrence drops back the pass. Lawrence got Chark. Chark to the 20. Chark to the 30. Chark to midfield. He goes all the way. Did you see that block there by Cam Robinson? I mean, Robinson. Robinson and Norvell. There goes Robinson. That's James Robinson. Did you see that block by Cam? Him and Norwell. My goodness. They look like the old hogs of the Washington football team. $15.227. Am I crazy here? I mean, come
on. Absolutely not.
Help me out.
I'm not paying him. I know it's not my money either, but I told you what I'm going to... Listen, Cam, it's not us. It's you. I'm not paying you that money. Not when I could get a guy like Trent Williams. He's proven. We're trying to win now. Super team, just like Jannetty just said, you can create a super team here. You're not super. I'm sorry.
Lawrence has him in the pistol. He's now under center. He's calling the old 39 periwinkle. The handoff. It is to Shenault. Shenault, the counter. Did you see Cam Robinson with the pancake? Shenault to the 40. Shenault, 30, 20. Touchdown, Jackson. Let's throw it down to Rick Ballew. What did you see there, Rick? It was all about Cam Robinson, man. He's the greatest tackle in the history of the National Football League. And he's worth that $15,200,000. And 27,000.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we need tonight till 9. Then it is the Sports Den. Tomorrow night, we're live on location. Ballew and Saunders will be live over at Mr. Shelby's in Ponte Vedra. Out there 6 to 8. Bob Costas tomorrow night, right? 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock. The Bob Costas.
You know
that guy.
You know what my first question to Bob Costas is?
I mean, how did it feel to call Jordan's last shot as a Chicago Bull?
No, whether or not the Jaguars should re-sign Cam Robinson.
I don't even know if you'll know the answer to that question, to be honest with you.
That's kind of why I said it. Kind of a joke. Maybe it didn't go over well, but looking forward to talking with him. Jarrett Bell tomorrow night as well.
Jarrett Bell, 6:35.
Looking forward to getting out there. That'll be 6 to 8. Orlando Brown is 24. He'll be 25 in May. So he's of the same age as Cam Robinson. He's listed at 6'8", 355. Okay, there's no way he is 355 pounds. I mean, he's got to be 380 pounds, 375, 380 pounds. Let's get off Robinson for a moment because I've been talking about him a great deal, and it needs to be discussed. It is the most important question in this city. And whenever I say that, I feel like I have to say, with the understanding that Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick. Look at what you would have to give up to get Orlando Brown. What's it going to cost? Would you give up the 25th pick in the first round to get this football player? Is it going to cost more than just a first-round pick? And if you make a deal like that on draft day or before the draft with Orlando Brown, what you were saying to him and his camp is, we really want you. So all of a sudden, as far as contract negotiations go, all the power goes to his side. You don't make a move to bring in a guy, give up a first-round pick, maybe another pick, and then try to give him a low-ball offer. No. You're going to pay him kind of what, you know, Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle for the Baltimore Ravens before he went down with that, I think it was an Achilles heel injury. This year. Remember, Stanley is their left tackle. Brown's their right tackle. Brown went from right to left. It was the same week Stanley got that huge contract extension, and then he got injured. I want to say Stanley right now is either the second or third highest paid tackle in the NFL. He's right there with Laremy Tunsil, is either the second or third. So, perfect world. You get a deal done with in-house with Robinson. You don't have to touch your 25th pick. So weigh that. And I know it's hard because I've always felt that grading the offensive line and understanding the offensive line is without any question the most difficult thing to do in football. So I would expect a lot of you not to have a real solid opinion on this. It's one thing if I ask if you're interested in Allen Robinson, okay, or if you're interested in Chris Godwin, or, you know, if you're interested in a pass rush end like Shaq Barrett. That's what, but when you start talking about tackles, and you're talking about a right tackle who played left tackle in Orlando Brown, and then when you put into order what is better for this organization, pay Cam Robinson, keep all your draft picks, or say goodbye to Cam Robinson, make a trade for Orlando Brown. It's going to cost you that second first-round pick, pick number 25 overall, and it's probably going to cost you another pick. So now you lose a player for nothing in Robinson. You have to give up two major draft prospects for a guy, and then you're going to have to overpay him to keep him. Probably going to have to give him, what, $17, $18 million a year? That's a tough decision to make. That is a brutal decision to make. And don't kid yourself. The importance of this decision is enormous. Urban Meyer said it a couple of Fridays ago. He said it when he met with Jane Slater of the NFL Network. He is not as concerned about this offensive line as, let's say, everyone else in town is. He has seen something. He believes in something. He kept George Warhop as his offensive line coach. To me, that spoke volumes. I can't, you know, how many times did we go over it? And I thought he would keep Keenan McCardell. He did not. He's in Minnesota. I thought maybe he would keep Joe DeCamillis, special teams coordinator. He did not. He's in L.A. He ended up keeping three defensive coaches, you know, and a couple of other staffers, but he kept George Warhop. as his offensive line coach. So if Urban Meyer, and again, you have to play, you know, you absolutely have to take into serious consideration the year that Trent Baalke has spent here in Jacksonville. Head of pro personnel, interim, general manager, now full-time general manager. He has got a year's worth of expertise, analysis, right or wrong, yes or no, sign or let go. Baalke has that. He's been here the entire season. He's seen it all. He's seen an 80-man one. He's seen an 81-man roster. Urban Meyer and his staff, they're looking at film. They're reading notes from others. Baalke's been here. Okay? He's seen it all. His opinion on left tackle is enormous. It's huge. So I just think that the combination of the fact that we know for sure Norwell, Linder, Cann, and Taylor, and Coach George Warhop are coming back, all getting ready to be, you know, when you look at the offensive line, for a third consecutive year. Where does Cam fit in? I just gave you the Orlando Brown scenario. Boy, is that expensive. You want to give up two frontline players and then sign them for that? If you knew Orlando Brown was going to be special, if you knew Orlando Brown was going to be one of the top five left tackles in the NFL, then yeah, you make the trade, and yeah, you pay the man. But I don't want to give up these type of picks. The type of picks I want to give up is a late Saturday pick to acquire a Calais Campbell this year. Okay? I want the Jaguars to be on the side of, all right, we're giving up on a player because he costs too much. He's still a frontline starter like Campbell last year. Campbell was dealt to Baltimore for a fifth rounder because he had a cap figure of, what, $14.5 million. And the Jaguars were in rebuilding mode. Baltimore disappointed. I thought the Ravens had a real good chance to make a Super Bowl run. They went for it. You know, they had a lot of injuries, both on the offensive line and defense. But Jacksonville can be that team this year. I'm not saying it's going to happen at the left tackle position. Who knows where it's coming from? It could come from New Orleans with a guy like Marshawn Lattimore. There's a lot of names. I think there's going to be more activity this season than we have ever seen. Because when we get closer to the draft, organizations begin to freak out. They want picks. And picks help you out in so many different ways. Number one, every time you give up a veteran for a pick, that automatically gives the organization that much more money. Because even the minimum for a veteran, 7-8 year veteran, is far more expensive than a rookie. You know, every night I get asked about dumping Taven Bryan. Doesn't really make a lot of sense to dump Taven Bryan right now. Okay? He's scheduled to make $1.864 million, $1,864,000. His cap hit is $3,231,000. If you cut him, you are going to have a dead cap figure of $2,071,000. So do you keep him on your roster for an additional basically $1,100,000 and hopefully get some work out of him in the rotation as opposed to just completely cutting bait? You're not saving any. You're saving $1 million. It financially doesn't make any sense. Okay, now obviously not going to pick up the fifth year of his option. Okay, we got it there. But I'm just trying to, because, you know, that's my opinion on it. I get that question almost every single night. You know, why don't they cut Taven Bryan? Well, there's really no benefit in cutting him. This isn't a cash-strapped team. Now, if someone wants to take him in a trade, you know, you put together some sort of deal and someone believes that they can change Taven Bryan, you know, give him a new opportunity somewhere. We've seen that. Possibly, but, you know, the Jags don't have a lot of high-priced guys. They just don't. You look at their cap hit guys, they've only got two players right now in double digits. That's Andrew Norwell at $15 million and Miles Jack at $12,150,000. Joe Schobert, just under $10 million at 9.9. Linder, $8,562,000. Can, 6.2. Then it's the rookie, Allen, 6.2. Henderson, 4.66. This is not a fat roster. This is a young, inexpensive roster. And the Jaguars have the ability to maneuver and do a lot of really good things. And I would expect them to take advantage of the three opportunities that they have. Number one being free agency. Number two, moving a late draft pick to acquire a proven starter for a team that's trying to cut bait as far as cash. And then obviously number three, you have 11 draft picks. So it looks good. It does. It looks very, very good. But right now, for me, it's all about the left tackle position. That is so much more important than anything else. It's so much more important than that second corner. It's so much more important than a defensive tackle. It's so much more important than a tight end. It's more important than a safety. It's more important than a second back. I do want to flirt a little bit with the idea of adding speed. Speed, speed, speed. That I like. That gets me fired up a little bit. Okay? Not Allen Robinson. Uh-uh. Speed. Unteachable, blazing speed. That's what I want to see. Urban Meyer, Shoddy, Bevel, Trevor Lawrence, and speed. So, no, I'm not overpaying for Allen Robinson. I'm not overpaying for any of those veteran wide receivers. I'm not doing it. All right, my opinion's in. Yours is coming up. John Osher's coming up. Our Wednesday conversation with the Jaguars senior writer. He will join us as well. Lots to do. We got Florida State Miami hoops coming up in about 40 minutes. Florida State tonight in South Florida, favored by 12 points on the road. Your total's 143. Noles are 13-3, 9-2 in the ACC. Gosh, Miami sucks. They're 7-13, 3-12 in the ACC. What an embarrassment the Canes are this year in college basketball. Florida State's got it going. It's at the Wasco Center in Coral Gables. Easy for me to say. Noles a big favorite, though. Favored by 12 in this one. John Osher joins me next.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, John Osher's in. Joins me on Wednesday night. Senior writer at Jaguars.com. Get everything from Johnny O by going to Jaguars.com. Mr. Osher, welcome in.
Rick, how are you, buddy?
I'm well. You kidding me? The weather is beautiful, and, you know, this personality just completely enlightens when we have a nice day.
Does it? Okay. All right.
I'm a weather guy.
I learned that about you. I didn't know you were so weather-centric, Rick.
Oh,
I like that.
Huge. Huge. Honestly.
All right.
I am. I don't know if it's a chemical imbalance or what it is, but when I wake up and it's rainy and it's nasty out, I'm just in a terrible mood. When it's nice and sunny like today, you could do or say about anything to me and I'm going to be okay with it.
All right, well, next time it's sunny, I'll test that. How about that?
Hey, Tyler Eifert let go in the last 24 hours. Really no surprise. It was a $6 million cap hit, and the Jags were able to save, you know, $5,250,000 by releasing him.
Yeah, and that's a story that
usually with a veteran of that experience, when they leave their original team and go sign with the next team, it's often a couple-year deal with exactly the kind of thing put in, to allow for a release. And I think even when they first sign him, had there not been a regime change, I think, generally speaking, you sign sort of a trial balloon like that,
mm-hmm.
and you leave yourself an out to get out of it. I was talking to somebody a couple weeks ago, and they were asking me what veterans might be parted ways with as a surprise, and I didn't put Eifert on that list because I just sort of assumed that this was coming. So, as you said, no surprise. It does certainly clear the decks even more for a complete rethought and reworking of that position, which at some point you've got to make those moves and get that position right.
The position's really been a disaster since, Mercedes Lewis. And, I'll never forget that camp with Julius Thomas's first camp. I really thought he was going to be a decision maker. Then, I thought he kind of packed it in. Then it was Austin Seferian Jenkins before he hurt his oblique. I mean, they've tried several different things. It just hasn't worked.
Yeah, and it's I mean, think about this more and more this offseason. I guess I think about every offseason because it's been such a tricky spot. But it's really by nature a tricky spot. And by that I mean this.
Mm-hmm.
Most tight ends who are the elite guys aren't the first round tight end. Kelce, Kittle come to mind. Those are the two names everybody thinks of.
Yeah.
Well, nobody saw these guys coming, in terms of being at the level they're at. And then once the team finds a guy, it may be the most protected position in free agency because they're so hard to find. So there's not as many out there that are elite as you think. The ones that are stand out because they're so good. I keep going back. It's not that the Jaguars haven't tried to find them. And they had T.J. Hockenson targeted a couple years back. That was going to be the solution. And then Josh Allen fell into their lap, and you couldn't pass that up. And I think that happens to a lot of teams. They have a guy targeted, and then there's a position that's a little more premium, and you say you got to go after it. And I think it's a tricky spot for everybody. We notice it here because it's been so tricky for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like you, and when you get your questions daily on social media or certainly there on the website, Ask Johnny O, with the relationship with Tyler Bowen and this highly ranked tight end, I think it's Freiermuth out of Penn State or
sure.
Kyle Pitts out of Florida. I mean, boy, I just because of the reason that you just stated, I mean, there's so many other needs. Just there's a lot of first round tight ends that have never panned out.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was talking to Pete Frisco about this today, as a matter of fact, and we were sort of listening to guys who hadn't panned out, and it just makes it tough because so often the guys are, you have to develop them. You have to find them later. Antonio Gates, almost a complete fluke and one of the greatest tight ends in history, a basketball player who was a collegiate free agent. There are exceptions. Everybody knew Tony Gonzalez was going to be great when
mm-hmm.
he got drafted. But, Rick, you and I, that's been two decades.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago. So, I covered one. The Colts drafted Dallas Clark, and for about 6 or 7 years, Dallas Clark was a big-time threat and a first-round pick. But those guys that you can target who actually work out at that spot, they're comparatively rare.
Yeah, I just want one for Trevor Lawrence. And I look at the great teams. They have very productive tight ends. I think that safety valve is so important. We've seen Jacksonville – even last year, very involved in moving players for picks. I mean, moving Calais Campbell, it only brought back a fifth-round pick. And, we understand that they did that to free up nearly $15 million. What about Jacksonville being on the other side of something like that this year? Philadelphia is struggling for money. I know they just recaptured some by moving Wentz. But what if they were wanting to move Zach Ertz and it was a Saturday pick? Does something like that interest you?
They're saying give up costs them a pick for a player this year.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense. You could see him doing that, and a lot of people have written me about the theory. I think it makes a lot of sense. You have 12 first-rounders, or not first-rounders, the rookies from last season, plus James Robinson. You figure Jake Luton might not play a whole lot. So 12 rookies playing a lot this year. If you draft 11 more, then all of a sudden you probably got, what, if you had a couple of free agents, 25, 26 rookies or second-year players, is that how many you want? Is that a little too many?
Mm-hmm.
You make the argument that it is. So a couple of things wouldn't surprise me. From people I've talked to, Trent Baalke likes to trade a lot during the draft to enhance his positioning in different spots where he thinks the draft is strong. That might mean moving up at first and moving back, but dealing picks to get multiple picks in rounds where he thinks is really strong. I think you might see that, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know that you trade picks for old guys, but to trade a pick for, 28, 29-year-old guy who maybe has three or four good years left, if it's not a day one or two pick, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just go back and forth on all this, and I think the Jaguars have just the luxury this year to, really be that team that makes a move and gives up a late pick, because I think it's going to be fascinating, John. I think teams are going to give up frontline starters who cost an awful lot because they're trying to get under the cap. And if you can acquire, a pick later in the draft, I think we're going to see that type of movement.
Yeah, it makes some sense. And I don't have a great feel. I've been trying to read it, trying to talk to people for exactly it. I haven't thought about it a lot because that's not going to apply to the Jets. But in trying to figure out exactly how that cap is going to – are teams going to try to mortgage the future a little more, hang on to their guys and hope the cap goes back up? Because you can work out pretty much however you want. You can make the cap work for you. But I do think there'll be some of that. I don't know if it's going to be enough to have, elite players available to the Jaguars and create that. People keep asking, hey, will this cap thing cause more great players to be available?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think teams are going to let great players go. But you might see 2, 3, 4 more at a couple of different positions that are at least enticing and that you like signing. Sometimes with free agency, you get to the point where you just don't like signing the guys because you know there's a reason the team gave up on them.
Yeah. Let's wrap with this. We made it the entire way through without me mentioning Cam Robinson, but with the understanding of Trevor Lawrence, I believe left tackle is the most important decision that Urban Meyer and Trent Baalke are going to have to make. You have until the 9th to slap down a tag, and free agency officially opens up the tampering period a week later on the 15th. If the Jaguars are interested in Cam Robinson, are negotiations already underway?
Yeah, you would think they are. These things are funny. Sometimes they get real public, depending on the agent. And this one hasn't gotten public either way. The agent has not sort of leaked, hey, something's going on, or hey, we're mad, hey, we're this. So it seems like this one's going to be quiet. And I think the best indication will be whether or not there's a tag, whether or not there's maybe some news leaking out there around the time of the tag. It's been interestingly quiet. When I say interesting, I don't know necessarily how to interpret the quiet, but it's been unusually quiet for a player who's this important in terms of the offseason decision to come.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, Johnny, always a lot of fun. Thank you as always. We'll talk again real soon.
Rick, thanks, buddy. Look forward to it.
There he goes, John Osher, senior writer, Jaguars.com. And that would come into play for anyone that they're really interested in. You're going to repay to keep Keelan Cole here. Keelan Cole was arguably the best wide receiver on the football team last year. Arguably. You can make the case for LaVisca Chenault. And when I look at upside, obviously Chenault has tremendous upside. The thing that concerns you there is injuries. And, Chark now, 2 out of his 3 years, he's been beaten up. What did he miss? nine games as a rook, and he wasn't himself last year. I think he was, in my opinion, he wasn't himself physically. He wasn't himself mentally. I think he was disgruntled with the offense and everything. Now, I don't know that. Again, we weren't in the building. We didn't get a chance to be around the locker, you know, and talk with him the way that we normally do because of COVID. This is just my gut instinct that he wasn't happy. Keelan Cole is a guy that I like, but here's the way I like him. I like him if he gave Jacksonville a bargain opportunity, you know, if he gave him a hometown discount. And who am I to say give this organization a hometown discount? He made $3.2 million last year. That was good money, but he may be able to double that in the open market. And I don't think Jacksonville should pay for that for a guy who, in my opinion, is going to be their fourth best wide receiver. They're going to get a guy, whether it's free agency or the draft. I think you go into camp with, you know, Chark 1, Chenault 2. And then that's the player you add who could be, I mean, if it's Allen Robinson, it could be as high as number one. You know, if it's Kenny Golladay, it could be a number one. Could be. But I hope you understand where I'm going here. I don't want to pay $6 or $7 million for a guy who, in my rankings, is your fourth best wide receiver. Smoot, yeah. You know, I think he's a rotation guy. I think he's a big DE. You know, be interested to see what they think he can do in a 3-4 scheme, if in fact that's what is going to be run here. Again, you got to cost, you got to add it up. What does he cost? Is he turning into a snap count guy? You know, how many plays is he going to give you every Sunday? Is he going to give you 30 plays a game? Is he going to give you 40 plays a game? What's he going to give you? I understand that, you know, last 2 years combined, he's had the second most sacks within this organization, which really isn't saying a lot, particularly last year. They were terrible. What did they end up with? 18 sacks, 19 sacks, and 16 games? It's terrible. Sidney Jones is one that intrigues me. Okay, he can't stay healthy. Can't. Showed signs last year. Came back maybe too early. Wasn't the same. I don't know. What's he going to cost? I don't know if I'd feel comfortable, but the combination of C.J. Henderson, Sidney Jones as my two starters at corner, that absolutely has to be addressed, hopefully in the draft. I don't know. Maybe they'll get something done in a trade or free agency. But those would be the prime ones that I would look at. I mean, there's others you can make a case for, like O'Shaughnessy, Shatley. You know, not necessarily dear. I actually like O'Shaughnessy. He does a nice job. But if he was like your third tight end, you know, perfect world is you get a guy. Perfect world is that Josh Oliver in year three finally is able to stay healthy. Boy, when you mention a guy and you mention staying healthy, it's just terrible. And that's what comes to mind when you say Josh Oliver. That's what comes to mind when you say Sidney Jones. That's what comes to mind, unfortunately, when you say DJ Chark. That's what comes to mind when you say, unfortunately, Brandon Linder. That's what comes to mind when you say CJ Henderson. That's what comes to mind if you look at the career of Colorado with Laviska Shenault, who really fought through several injuries last year. It's part of the game, but, you know, there's risk. And that's part of the game. You really can't, well, I don't know if you can project it, but you kind of have to, don't you? Seriously, isn't that part of the overall thought process? If a guy's been hurt his whole career, he's going to get hurt again. All right, Tyler Eifert, surprisingly enough, made it through for the most part. He missed a couple of games. He had a concussion. But you know the track record on that. Guys who get hurt always get hurt. Doesn't matter the sport. Guys who stay healthy, for the most part, stay healthy. All right, thank you to John Osher. Good stuff there. We will continue. Let's get to your feedback. 641-1010 on the text line.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yes, sir. Join us tomorrow night live at Mr. Chubby's, Ponte Vedra, 6 to 8. A lot of fun schedule. Bob Costas scheduled at 7 o'clock, among other things. Should be a lot of fun. Great specials out of Mr. Chubby's. Great drink specials. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite. You get the buckets for $10, $3 wells. Great time. Three locations. We'll be out at the one in Ponte Vedra. All right, we got something coming up around here called the Trevor Cast. Okay, we're going to put it together starting tomorrow. It's going to run up until draft day on April 29th, and it's going to be both Hayes Carline and Matt Hayes. They put together something special, including their first guest. He will be David Cutcliffe.
First of all, I think people will be surprised just how big he is. And what I mean by big is not tall. People forget sometimes, you know, that there's size is a lot of many different things. He's proportionate. He's got a great lower body, which has served him very well running, but it also serves you in throwing the football.
All right, it's David Cutcliffe. And obviously the success he has had as a collegiate career, most recently at Duke, talking about Trevor Lawrence. So this is one of the many podcasts that we do have up at 1010XL.com. And this one gets underway tomorrow.
Absolutely. The Trevor Cast is bright like the forecast was great for Rick Ballew today, hopefully for the rest of the week. But Matt and Hayes, they're going to be talking to a variety of people in connection to Trevor Lawrence. It could be family member of his, a college coach, a teammate, high school coach, an opponent, a national analyst, someone who's close to Trevor Lawrence. You're just going to have to tune in to every episode and find out. You're going to be learning more through these 10 weeks about who your new face of the franchise is. So new episodes, and this week will be David Cutcliffe. This will be released on Thursday morning. And it's made possible by our friends at Claude Nolan Cadillac, the official sponsor of the Trevor Cast. Do you think he's too small, Rick? Do you think he needs to get bigger? Do you agree with Cutcliffe that, you know, size could mean a myriad of things, and we shouldn't be worried about Trevor once he comes here in Jacksonville?
213 right now is a little light for me, but I think he'll add some weight. I mean, we're talking about a, what, 20 to 21-year-old man. He's going to get bigger. I think you'll see in a few years that he'll, you know, be a quarterback that's 225, 230 pounds. I think it'll happen. Nutrition, weight gain, age. Quarterbacks add weight. And to me, it's not a concern right now, but I think it's something that we will see him add as time goes by. So we look forward to that. You know, just about all of us now have podcasts that are up. Myself, along with Hayes Carline as well, have Death, Taxes, and Duval. We just finished our second podcast right before I went on the air tonight, so you can check that out as well. Where do you get all these podcasts? Where's the best place to go?
You can go on 1010XL.com. That's normally where you can get all your podcasts. You can also go to Best of 1010XL on SoundCloud. Get all your podcasts there from all the hosts that we have here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. There's also podcasts on Spotify as well as other places. But make sure just to catch up on all these guys, especially Death, Taxes, and Duval.
Yeah, two in. We're enjoying it. The 92.25 says, Ballew, you're crazy. Cole is a number one wide receiver every year with a good quarterback. Really? Wow. I'm surprised that opinion has been offered up. A number one. His hands got better this year, but they have been inconsistent throughout his career. Surprised by that. Josh Oliver's a bust. He won't make an Urban team. No way. You know what? There's a chance that could come to fruition. I thought he looked timid as a rookie. I thought he looked scared as a rookie. He looked like he put on sizable weight gain, you know, during his second year. But obviously, as we saw, he he still wasn't able to maintain. I kind of get that feeling with a guy like Urban. You know, I'm not going to go to the Lou, what Ricky Waters and them said about Lou Holtz and the Untarnished Dome book, which is one of the great reads of all time. That, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, you're basically useless if you're in the hot tub or you're in the ice tub. But, yeah, Josh Oliver's got to figure out if he wants to be a football player or not. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Let's see here. This is from Sean, the South Side of 2772. He says, Urban is in this for the long haul. Most of this will be done by the draft, cherry-picking free agency. I'm glad you said that. Thank you. Because, you know, I think there's this, and Michael Jannetty said it when we had him on in our first hour. But there's a little bit of this. Let me give you an analogy. Rosie O'Donnell's moving through a buffet. Rosie's going to eat everything she comes in contact with. That's her. She likes to eat. She's going to get a belly full. The Jaguars do not need to spend all of this money right now. Just because you have $83 million under the salary cap doesn't mean you have to blow it all right now. You can add a couple of players. You can spend half of it, or you can spend 60 or 65 or 70% of it. But this texter's right. You win by drafting you win by having a great quarterback, and you win by getting it done in the draft. How many current Jaguars right now have been around for a second contract? How many? Avery Jones, and he's a free agent. Miles Jack. AJ Cann. Brandon Linder. Did I miss anyone? Is that it? Second contracts. I mean, that's how you win. You win by drafting players and keeping your own players. Not by acting like that team in the District of Columbia and going out and spending all your free agency money. Just because you have it doesn't mean you need to spend it. Just like if it's there, doesn't mean you have to eat it.
Rosie O'Donnell.
It's a great, great text. Totally agree with that. $47.25. Blue, I'd rather lose a million and start fresh with someone else other than Taven. Yeah, you know, I get your point. My example was it really doesn't do the organization all that much. You're going to save $1 million. You're going to have about $2.5 million in dead money. This organization is in good enough, you know, salary cap space that they can afford to do it. What needs to be said now about Taven is what I said all last year about Cam Robinson. It's a contract year. How is he going to play? Does he want to earn a long-term contract extension? I don't think Cam Robinson has earned the long-term contract extension. I know Taven Bryan hasn't. Taven Bryan has looked lost at times. He looks like he's in another world on the football field. And that's scary, okay? At least with Cam Robinson, I mean, there are times where he's gotten beaten. Okay, he did show up out of shape a couple of years ago when he tore that ACL. That's a little bit alarming to me. The fact that he came out with a wrist injury this year is a little bit alarming to me. Or that Green Bay really exposed him. I mean, he did, yeah. But those are, for the most part, physical things outside of not being in shape. Taven Bryan's out there like he's got, I don't know who, Johnny Cash playing in his Walkman or something. I mean, what is he doing? He looks lost. So maybe you just say forget about it and cash in those chips and take the loss. You know, the other side of the equation is, will he play hard final year of his deal? Is there a chance that maybe you can get a little something out of him? during his last season. The 0620 says, Ballou, the Jags should wait for the Raiders to release Trent Brown. Well, that's kind of what I've been saying here. I think they're going to be some players who are released. Now, I haven't studied the Las Vegas Raiders as far as their contract. Does it make sense to cut him pre-June 1st, after June 1st? Could you get him in a draft day trade where, economically speaking, that becomes better? Or, you know, he was at one point the highest paid offensive tackle in the NFL. Do you not take on that contract? Do you allow for him to be released? You know, there's different ways to honestly look at that. And, you know, I don't know if there is a right answer at this particular time. 4725 says, Ballou, you have better access to the Jags regular fans. With that said, how has Robinson regressed or underperformed? I just don't think he's been a consistent left tackle. I don't think he's been, you know, he was considered first-round talent who fell to, you know, the top part of the second round. I don't think he's lived up to those expectations. And as I've always said, I talk about the offensive line with players who have played that position before, and I've received a lot of input from them. I just don't think he's a dominant pass blocker. And I think he's pretty subpar as a run blocker. Now, in his defense, he hasn't had a quarterback. It's been a whirlwind. I mean, every single couple of weeks, it's a new quarterback. Look at this man's career. What? Bortles, Henny, Foles, Glennon, Gardner Minshew, Jake Luton. Who was the guy a couple of years ago who got some starts in from the Cleveland Browns? I can't even think of his name anymore. A couple of years ago, had a cup of coffee here. I mean, that can't sit well with the offensive line. They're always going to say the right stuff. But you haven't had a great quarterback. Every single season, you have a different offensive coordinator. Every single season, you have a brand new offensive scheme. There isn't any consistency there. Cody Kessler, thank you. There isn't any chemistry there. So you can make that point that, you know, just like someone said earlier with Keelan Cole, he's a number one wide receiver. If he had a quarterback, maybe Cam Robinson's a good left tackle if you actually have a solid game plan. Again, this organization is averaged under 8 points a game in the first half over the last 2 years. That means when they begin the third quarter of play, they are a one-dimensional football team. They are forced to throw the football. And defenses don't even have to guess. They know exactly what's going on. You got a subpar to below-average quarterback throwing the football against a defense in heavy pass rush situations and pass defensive scheme. So I don't care how good your offensive line is. You're going to get beat in that situation. So maybe some of this criticism to him is unfair. And possibly Trent Baalke and Urban Meyer right now are saying, yeah, you know, trust me, pay him. We're going to fix this offense. You know, we're going to show defenses. They're going to think we're running, we're going to pass. They're going to think we're pass, we're going to run. You know, we're going to go speed, speed, speed. We're going to add some guys on the outside that can run. We're going to find another back to complement James Robinson. We're going to do a lot of nifty little things. You've already got a dynamic guy can do a lot of things behind the line of scrimmage like Chenault. You're going to add another one. Hell, for all we know, they maybe add Kadarius Toney at 25. You're not going to be able to get Kadarius Toney at 25 if you trade that pick and another pick to get Orlando Brown. You're not going to be able to get a guy like Kadarius Toney if you have to use that 25th pick to get the highest ranked tackle in the draft. You re-sign Cam, that's taken care of. But he still hasn't earned it for me. Not for me. But maybe they believe the light's going to go on. And all you got to do is just fix the scheme. I mean, if there's one thing that Jaguar fans do not want to hear, enter Nate Hackett, enter Greg Olsen, you know, enter Scott Milanovich on the interim level, enter John DeFilippo, enter Jay Gruden. I mean, every year, it's like that woman who's been married 4 or 5 times, and she tells the new husband, you are the love of my life. And then a year later, you're heading towards the divorce train. Every year, Jaguar fans have to deal with the fact that they're being told that they're going to have the perfect offensive scheme. And it's a bunch of rubbish. Maybe this year, it's finally going to be put together with Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer. And who knows? Maybe they think Cam is the guy for the job.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, with you for another 5 or so minutes tonight. Get you ready for the sports. Then tomorrow night, Mr. Chubby's Ponte Vedra Beach will be out there 6 to 8 among our guests. Bob Costas at 7, also from 6 to 8 on Friday night. Let's go to Vegas. Rafael Esparza's with us from MyBookie, MyBookie.com. Hello, Rafael.
How's it going?
Doing well, doing really well. If you begun to really put together NCAA college basketball odds, and is Gonzaga and Baylor far ahead of everyone else?
They're ahead, but I think me and you both agree they're probably not going to be the so-called favorites. I mean, right now, because we still have to play conference tournaments. I mean, seeding is going to be huge. Let's face it, Baylor will win the Big 12, but don't sleep on like Florida State. The Big Ten is so stacked. Michigan, Ohio State, Garza from Iowa, Illinois, even though they lost yesterday. Until Gonzaga cuts down those, and I'm a huge Gonzaga fan, but they were the huge thorn in my back when I ran Vegas sports books, but now I'm a big fan of them. They're going to have their first one and done player in their school history this year. I wouldn't say if there's some books that have where you could take Baylor and Gonzaga versus the field. I'm taking the field.
Oh, my God, am I ever taking the field. And I'm glad you said that, because Gonzaga and Baylor combined, neither one of those two schools have ever won a national title.
No, and Baylor said that they just came back. I mean, they were off from almost 3 weeks to the COVID issue. So, I mean, that could do damage. It's just too hard. Duke's playing really well. Villanova, they would have to go against. Let's say if they have to face up with either one of them, with Virginia, who's played so much stall ball that just frustrates teams. Would I love to see Gonzaga cut down on that? Yes, I think that would be fantastic. But if I had a choice, I'm taking a field, because let's face it, they're going to be a 16 seed. They're going to have to play a tough team like, let's say, South Dakota, Texas State, Cleveland State, which the Vikings have been playing outstanding ball all season long. I'm not sold on them be just running away from everybody else.
Virginia just got upset at home by North Carolina State. So Florida State now up 17-7 over Miami. If Florida State wins this game tonight, they'll take a 2-game lead over the Cavaliers in the Atlantic Coast Conference. We spoke during football about, you know, the Buckeyes playing 6 games compared to, you know, the Southeastern Conference and obviously the Atlantic Coast Conference. Have you really begun to think about teams like Baylor, who have missed 3 weeks? Around here, the Gators missed 2.5 weeks. The Seminoles missed nearly 3 weeks. And you look at Gaines played, there is some teams where there's a rather large discrepancy. What do you believe, how much of a factor is that going to be after the conference tournaments?
I think after, it's not that going to be that huge of a factor, because we're talking apples to oranges, because you got a tournament of 68 teams, so it's not like in bowl season where you play one game and you're done, or if you make it to the Final Four in college football, you have one more game and then you're playing for the national championship. These guys have to go through all these teams, so I think it may hurt some teams, especially Baylor. I think it's going to hurt more of them than Michigan. Let's face it, I think Michigan in the Big Ten has probably been the best conference in college hoops. But it's not going to be that big of influences when the tournament actually starts. Let's face it, a bracket that big of 68 teams to a bracket of four teams is totally different.
All right, we're short on time tonight because I've been long-winded at MyBookie and MyBookie.com. You always got a lot of great stuff going on. I mean, it's happening in everything right now, just about every sport.
Yeah, every sport. And let's face it, I know UFC plays this weekend and Saturday, but next week, March 6th, UFC 259.
Yes.
Not one, not two, but three title fights. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. Can't wait for it. But Canelo Alvarez steps in the boxing ring this weekend. He has some great college basketball. But I'm sorry, March 6th, or March, UFC 259 NCAA tournament pretty much starts in March. You have conference tournaments. I can't wait for four more days to get kick February out. February is a horrible month. I want March. You have college hoops. You have NHL, NBA, UFC 259. March is going to be lit.
No doubt about it. Not to mention the Southern Swing gets underway tomorrow in Bradenton. We'll be here in Ponte Vedra in just a couple of weeks. All right, tell us about my bookie.
Still have that 50-cent sign-up bonus. Jump on it right now because, like I said, this is the greatest time to sign up because, let's say, NASCAR started, the Masters around the corner, UFC 259. March Madness, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, baseball. Sign up today and cash today.
All right, Rafael Esparza. Thank you as always. We'll do it again next Wednesday.
Take it easy, guys. Have a fantastic weekend.
There he goes. That is Rafael Esparza.
Now, the two-minute drill on 1010XL.
Knowles up 25-8. It's a beautiful thing just to see Florida State wax the Canes.
It's a basketball school, man.
Florida State scored 25 points. I think that's more than they've scored in the last 2 years combined as far as football.
Y'all score against Miami sometimes. Was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago, they just completely quit. That's when they fired Willie.
William, yeah. Well, y'all are a basketball school. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It's a basketball conference.
Mm-hmm.
It's a basketball school. Y'all are doing well. I'm happy for you.
25-8, just sitting back here and enjoying it. Now I know James Cole will be able to sit here and enjoy it.
Well, now I will say this, though. I will be fair because I had a really good conversation with a football coach, the offensive coordinator at Florida State today. You guys, like, I do like the way they're recruiting right now.
Honestly.
I'm being serious.
I am, too. What has changed? I mean, obviously everything in 2022 and even 2023 is all projections, but they are off to a really good start after, obviously, this past year. They did a decent job recently with the transfer portal, but it wasn't a great recruiting year.
No, I think they are – I can tell you this from the conversations that I have. They know what they're talking about guys. They're doing their own scouting work on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're calling people that know the guys and asking about things that they see.
Right.
They're not offering guys just based off of star rating. They're doing a good job of offering guys who people don't know yet and then shortly do know, and they get into the running for them. And they're being disciplined with their approach. I didn't know that staff very well a couple months ago, and I know them pretty well now, and I've been nothing but impressed. And even as a Gator fan, I can say that.
Well, COVID really hurt them, and you can make the case that it really hurt everyone, but Mullen's been winning, and Mullen had been here before, and he had been at Mississippi State. Manny Diaz is from Miami, was at FSU, was at Mississippi State. He even went to North Carolina State at one point with Chuck Amah. I mean, those guys had some connections here. Mm-hmm. Mike Norvell comes in, COVID hits.
Yep.
It hurt him, as far because, recruiting is obviously the lifeblood of your program.
Yeah, for me, the shocking part, though, with Florida State wasn't the recruiting. It was how similar they looked on the field to the dysfunction of the previous years. That was the thing. Like, they were still having a lot of the same issues that they had, which then made you think, okay, is it just the crop of guys there? Is it the players there that just aren't picking something up? And so I don't know what it's going to look like going forward. I know what they would like for it to look like. I've been explained, offensively what they would like to do. I can just say that, like, from a recruiting perspective, it's impressive the work they're putting into that.
I'm trying to find a way that I want to say this. A lot of really unlikable guys on this recent Florida State
yeah,
game.
Yeah.
Team
yeah.
or teams. I mean, I for one, I get upset when they lose and then – whatever, but when they make their journey to get paid in the NFL, I always wish them well. There are guys coming out, going in and trying to make the NFL that for the first time in my life, I don't even want them to make it.
Yeah, you don't care.
They're so bad. I mean, they were bad human beings. They were bad teammates that I'm not wishing success for them. And I thought that I would never say that about my alma mater.
I mean, there were several guys that in their time at Florida State at one time or another, you thought they were going to be first rounders.
Absolutely.
I mean, I can never say the safety's name.
Hazardine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him, Terry, Marvin Wilson. Like
Terry might not get drafted.
At one point during their stay in Tallahassee, like, oh, they're going to be a first-round talent. And now it's like, I don't, like you said, I mean, a couple of them may not even get drafted.
Samuel will probably be the highest pick.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate that I feel that way. I can't control the way that I feel. I can't force myself to feel differently from feeling the way that I do right now. For the first time in my life, I mean, these pass rush ends.
Yeah.
Kando and Robinson?
The whole thing's been dysfunctional. If I was a Florida State fan, I'd just throw the last couple years away. Just forget about it. Because what good does it do now? Blame it on COVID. I know James hates that, but if I'm a Florida State fan, bump it. Blaming it on COVID just so I don't have to face reality.
All right, what do you got up tonight besides giving us play-by-play on this Florida State domination? It's 27-8 Garnet and Golds against the Convicts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we weren't here last night, so we're going to get into Tiger.
Yeah.
Got to get into the Valdosta High School situation. That is amazing.
Okay.
Speaking from someone who at one point was considered the GOAT of cheating in high school, I have nothing on this guy. Like, this guy is next level. And it's what's crazy about it, Rick, is this isn't the first time he's done it.
Uh-huh.
He keeps doing it. And I'm almost going to buy into James that you can't be canceled if you're good enough. Even on his level, like, he has done the worst of the worst things and keeps getting high school head coaching jobs that's supposed to be a role model for kids and keeps finding a more spectacular way to screw them up. So Rush Probst is going to be a big part of our program.
It's coming up right now. That is Denny Thompson. He is with James Coleman. JJ and company, they begin right now. Thank you to all our guests. Michael Jannetty for joining us tonight from Spot Track. I enjoyed that, really breaking down the Jaguars, where they are now financially speaking, under the cap, and also projecting some future contracts, including Cam Robinson, John Osher, Rafael Esparza. Join us tomorrow night live from Mr. Chubby's in Pontevedra. We'll be out there from 6 until 8. Among our guests, Bob Costas will join me at 7 o'clock. For our producer, RJ Saunders, my name is Rick Ballew. We'll talk then.